You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
In a weekend filled with powerful people in Hollywood, we've got the power here in Miami, live Sunday at 4 p.m. with Ben Lyons, myself, and Adnan Virk, and all of you from Metalark will be joining us.
Maybe.
Lucy, you're coming. You're dressing up.
They're going to win the Big Ten tournament. What are you worried about? They're going to be fine.
I don't like the way you're saying that. You might be a jinx. I don't know you that well, Ben.
They're playing that school in Ohio. You'll be fine.
Just join us at LebatardAF.com. It's going to be live on the YouTube Lebatard Network. But go to LebatardAF.com right now, and you can fill out a ballot. And if you beat me in the ballot, you have a chance to get a really cool prize. And if you win the whole bracket, but then you've got to beat thousands and thousands of people.
I hate filling out these Oscar brackets because everyone, if you want to win, you go with what you think the consensus is. But I have to go against my own convictions. So for a Best Picture winner, I'm going with Oppenheimer when I don't actually think it's the Best Picture of the year.
But you have to say what will win, not what should win.
Yeah, that's the tough part with these brackets, right?
I hate
these
that,
polls.
Though.
You want to say who you think should win.
I want to flash my conviction. Nominate the dog from Anatomy of a Fall.
How did they shoot that scene with the dog?
That was heartbreaking.
One take.
Not gonna do it. Not gonna spoil it for you.
There?
But you guys need to watch this movie before Sunday.
How do you do that? Like that is incredible.
What's
direction.
The name of the movie? Anatomy of a Fall.
Oh, yeah.
Molly and Me.
We need to make a rule here before we get here Sunday. What is the spoiler rule on Oscar Sunday?
I feel like Barbie and Oppenheimer at this point, you can spoil away.
Spoiler.
But Anatomy of a Fall, you can't.
But it's Oscar Sunday.
You can't do that with American Fiction. There's so many movies that people haven't gotten around to. There are so many movies that people are going to be learning about for the first time when they tune into this broadcast.
Yeah, you have to be sensitive to that, right? It's not safe to assume that everyone has seen everything. You have to kind of...
Well, I think it's safe to assume that no one has seen everything but us.
that's a good assumption.
And that's how you'd want when you're hosting an Academy Awards.
You've really
special.
Watched everything. Everything that has been nominated, from costume design to films.
I'm embarrassed on my short film knowledge. This year, I've only seen a handful. The short docs and the short animated ones. I'm hoping to find a theater here in Miami over the weekend.
I'm embarrassed for you.
Don't be. There's one documentary feature I haven't seen, To Kill a Tiger. Mm-hmm. That has not been. I've not been able to find that. And there's one international feature film I've not seen, and that's Io Capitano. Other than that, I've seen everything, including the creator, Godzilla, like all of the stuff in the various categories, shorts, because there's a theater in...
Would you say the visual effects in the creator were dazzling?
So I'm not telling you where I went on that category, because that is a category that will separate winners from losers. Yeah. That is one of the tough ones. There's so many categories when you guys fill out your ballot. Production design. How about best actress? Is it Lily? Is it Emma? Could it be Sandra?
She was terrific. We've been talking a lot of Anatomy of the Fall on the show today.
Look, if you spoke multiple languages in your role in that category, in my mind, you're considered a favorite. So Lily or Sandra.
She's in Zone of Interest as well. Did you know that?
Really? Have she a year, Sandra. How do you pronounce it? Hula?
And it's also unusual to have a film that is hands down the favorite to win Best Picture that has to deal with fatigue. It's been 8 months or whatever since Oppenheimer came out. Oftentimes you have a Best Picture nominee or a film that wins Best Picture being released in the fall. It comes to Toronto or something like
that.
My
whole conspiracy theory is we're at a point right now where we're trying to save cinemas and actually go into the movie. And Oppenheimer and Barbie did so much with that one shared release date to bring people back in the movies, and both those movies delivered, both commercially and critically. I think it's probably the conspiracy theory I'm running with is it's not just because it's an excellent movie, but it's almost in everybody's best interest if you reward the picture that everybody went to go see.
Also pretty amazing, though, if you think about it, that a film about a physicist in the 1940s is an international phenomenon.
Right? It's even crazier, it's not a superhero after the commercials, you would think.
That's still my favorite revelation from the year. Juju went to the movie theater thinking that Oppenheimer was a part of the MCU.
He might as well have been, since he did create a bomb that should be part of a comic book. I want to close this by calling out Lucy and International Women's Day and Barbie as what is the most surprising and greatest film of the year, because it delivered a message to both boys, girls, men, and women about the power and the equality that should exist, the skill, the love, the beauty. And if you haven't seen Barbie yet, if you're going to choose one movie and you haven't seen any Oscar movie before our show Sunday, I'm actually going to suggest you close your week and go see Barbie.
I think it's a perfect movie. It touches on every human emotion. It's a visual spectacle, obviously. It's a throwback to those Depression-era musicals that kept Hollywood afloat in the 30s and 40s. You have great performances, top to bottom. I think
7 hours of this we get Sunday.
Seven hours. Don't spoil
for
it.
For now.
Tell me which of the two songs you think might actually win Best Original Song.
I'm not willing to tell you, but Phineas?
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Dan Le Batard.
Amino Hassan.
Stugatz.
Amino Hassan.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
I am Eddie Johnson, and this is story time. So, Eddie, you played for Cotton Fitzsimmons. You played for Larry Brown, George Karl, Rudy Tom Donovan, some of the greatest coaches. You also played with Reggie Miller. You played with Hakeem Olajuwon. You played with Charles Barkley. You played with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp.
Larry Johnson, Alonzo Mourning.
That's right, when you were in Charlotte, including Del Curry and a small child.
Watching Steph shoot at the other end. Yeah.
I always find that players that played in a lot of different places and played with a lot of different types of personalities have a very unique perspective on the game in a way that a guy who may, like, on paper have a greater career than yours but played in one place doesn't. They don't have that kind of perspective. What is it about playing for all those different coaches and all those different great, playing with those different great players has helped you in terms of, like, understanding the game?
The first thing is it challenged me to obviously make adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because each team has playbooks that's like this.
Right.
And so now you go to a new team, you got to immediately, like, earn the respect of everybody, one, but most importantly, the coach, because it's about minutes. Like, athletes will tell you, it's about minutes. Like, the money is great, all of that, but we crave is minutes.
Yeah.
We want to play. And then everything else is in their control, so now we'll be able to get the money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But when a coach controls your minutes, then that puts you in a tough situation. And so for me, when I would go to these different coaches and these different teams, I would study these coaches. I already knew going in what they ran. I was a guy that had game tapes. I have game tapes right now in storage of probably 80% of the games I played in the NBA.
That's crazy.
So I got, like, I played in over 1,200 games.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I have a ton of tapes.
It's amazing.
And I'll go in storage every now and then, pull them out, and look at them. And guys were like, hey, man, what, you got that tape for that game and all that? Yeah, because they used to laugh at me. But one of the reasons I did it is because, one, I wanted to study guys. And two, I would watch games and watch what they ran and all of that. So if I did, because I knew I was going to get traded. I knew that I would not play for one team my entire career. Mm. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of knowing that, I wanted to always be in front of it and understand these coaches, know the history of the game. Like on my radio show, SiriusXM, we talk about the history of the game all the time. And I think that's why I have that job, you know, because I can just regurgitate stuff. But it's only because I studied it. It's not like something that just pops in my head. Mm. And so all these coaches were so different, you know, but they were the same. You know, they just wanted to motivate you in certain weird ways and certain dynamics. Like as I told you, Cotton told me to get off the bus, your wave. That spurred me to really concentrate and not get caught up into an individual situation and get away from the team.
Mm-hmm.
That made me understand that. And as a matter of fact, after that game, I didn't tell you, he didn't play me for about 7 straight games.
Wow.
He didn't play me. And then one day again, he said, are you playing? And then that on, I never changed. And so he just taught me that, you know, and he knew me past my family. And so when I went to my next coach, you know, I got traded from Cotton. And I had Phil Jackson. I had Bill McKinney. What was the McKinney for
McKinney,
the Lakers?
Yeah,
McKinney.
Yeah.
And that was right after his accident.
Right.
And I had him. And then I go to Seattle. I got Casey Jones.
Right.
Casey Jones, totally opposite.
Right.
Of Cotton. Laid back.
Yeah.
Always singing. Not a combustible coach. And Gary Payton and Sean Kemp were young rookies. And I show up, 50-5 win team I get traded from. And I'm watching Sean Kemp and Gary Payton show up late to practice. I'm watching Gary Payton talking in practice. As a rookie, you never talk.
Mm.
You don't talk when you're a rookie.
No. No. I remember a time when rookies knew their place. This is a couple of years ago, someone was telling me, I said, hey, where's the rook at? And they're like, oh, he comes in on the second bus. I was like, come on. Rookie on the second bus?
Wow.
Was unheard of. And I'm not talking about 100 years ago. I'm talking about when I worked in the league, which wasn't that long ago. Like, unheard of.
Yeah.
So, Gary.
Yeah.
And so I told Nate, I said, does he talk like this all the time?
Nate McMillan?
Yeah. He said, yeah, you know, and it wasn't like Gary was out of line.
Right.
We were talking about how to guard certain things and do this, but rookies don't, like, you know, so it's something new to me.
Right.
And I watched them for a few days and hanging around them and just, you know, and just trying to get to know them, as Rich Kelly taught me. And so one shoot around, he just was just... I said, Nate, I'm getting ready to say something. So you gotta back me up. I said, I'm getting ready to do something. Right. And I'm new to the team. I'm only a couple of weeks in. So I finally look, I said, hey, man. He turns and looks at me. I said, would you shut up and listen? That's Gary.
Okay? Yeah.
We all know how Gary is.
Yeah.
Gary got two big, at that time, he had two big buddies that was, you know, part of his entourage, and these dudes like big linebackers, right? I said, man, be quiet, man, and listen, man. You know? And he turned, and he kind of stiffened up, like not to fight, but just looked at me. Don't you know? I said, man, look, just be quiet and listen. And so, in order to, you know, I knew I had to, I've always believed, Like, if you're going to say something negative about somebody, I've learned this, especially in TV, mm-hmm. you better come back with about two or three things positive. Because mm-hmm. that's going to create a problem. They're going to go back right. and watch film. So I knew I had to. Something was going to happen in the locker room.
Right.
So he comes into the locker room. And but even before he can open his mouth, right, I went over and I grabbed him. I'm like, come here, man. You know, I said, look, the only reason I did that is because I just think you need to let the veterans talk and then you come in. Like,
right.
just let, they've been here longer. Let Nate handle it. And then you looked at me. I got you.
You got through to him.
Yeah, because, I mean, Gary, like, was face of the franchise.
Right.
Yeah.
He could have went upstairs. You know?
Yeah.
Get him out
of here. Get this new guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just that kind of stuff that, you know, I've learned, man, over this period of my life that, you know, and all the stories I have, that, oh, I could write a book.
You should.
But I never know. No, I can't.
You should.
I am an author. I have written a book, and I'm actually writing a book now. It's a fictional book.
So why do you say you can't write a book? You're writing a book.
But I'm not writing anything.
You can't say the things.
Some of these things can't be written. Can't be put
in writing. I can't. Because I'll get the writing, and I'm like, oh.
Well, the crazy thing is, so I was thinking about this when you're telling the story. You played for Casey Jones, who, like you said, laid back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the next coach was George Karl, who was the exact opposite of laid back. What was that transition like for the team?
The funny part is, so Benoit Benjamin had gotten traded mm-hmm. to us. And so Benoit's agent was Don King.
Really?
Yeah. So it is some stories that I will tell. So his agent was Don King. And so when he got traded to us, he comes walking into the gym because he had got there, he had, you know, got to the team, he got there late or whatever. And I see him come in, and we're at the other end practicing, and I see this entourage of, like, guys come in behind him. It had to be at least eight dudes. And they all had leather jackets on the same. So I'm looking. I'm like, and then, you know, I don't bite my tongue on anything. And the guys will tell you that I play with, they know. So I, like, kind of walk the other end. I want to see what's on the back of these jackets. As Team Benjamin.
Oh, come on,
man. Yeah. So all these dudes walk in. And I'm like, and they sit in the stands, which George didn't allow that, right? But right. he didn't say anything. So he comes out there and, you know, he meets everybody, all the players and everything. And then, fine. I went up to Nate. I said, boy, we going to have some problems. We going to have some problems. And George just looked at him. And so about a week later, it didn't take George long. George was very combustible.
Mm-hmm.
He had just coached over in Europe, finally got back to the NBA, and he thought he was a player still.
Mm.
And he and Benoit went at it. He started calling each other names, and Benoit started talking about his head, talking about George, how big George's head was. And George started calling him a fat, you know what? And George would want to fight. He was that combustible.
Yeah.
But you know what? That interaction, we loved it.
The rest of y'all are watching it like...
We loved it. Popcorn action. Because we had a coach that was like us.
Yeah.
You know? You could say anything to him. Like, he and Gary would go at it. But they loved each other.
Yeah.
Like, that was George's way of being close to his guy. And we loved it. I mean, so George was he's still talking junk on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, people just don't realize he's confrontational.
Yeah.
And but to me, man, he galvanized our team. He really did. Yeah. We had opportunities to win. And so George was great.
We were watching film with the scouts. And this is when Wes Matthews Jr. was in college, right? And so, you know, we're debating, like, is he an NBA prospect or not? I'm like, I don't know, man. He's kind of built like a football player. He's not that great of a shooter. Like, he plays like the four in college. But it's like, well, at the same time, like, he's tough. He's a good defensive player. You can teach the other stuff. And it doesn't hurt that he's got the bloodlines, like his dad played in the league. And one of the scouts said, oh, yeah? Who's his dad? And we're just like, his name is Wes Matthews Jr. I'll give you three guesses what his dad's name was.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Don Levitard.
Teammates can't shoot from three. Now they're gonna see a different Jimmy. Now he's just playing. Nickelback in the locker room and
Stugats.
They'll play D and shoot threes as they chase the Nets for the sixth seed. These five words in his head scream, are we winning games yet?
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugats.
I want to start with this Caleb Williams story and the story about parenting, because Kalen Collar at The Athletic has this story from late last month that sort of helped explain what was happening where Mina was at the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, because Caleb Williams not doing stuff there wound up being an enormous story in a way that spoke, Dan, to topics that you've been covering and talking about forever.
Caleb Williams is believed to be the first invitee to the scouting combine to decline to participate in the medical exams.
For the medical stuff, I'll be doing the medical stuff, just not here in Indy. I'll be doing it at the team interviews. You know, not 32 teams can draft me. There's only one of me. And so the teams that I go to for my visit, you know, those teams will have the medical and that'll be it.
What is that player supposed to do when he actually recognizes the power that he has, or at least has a dad who might be a person who listened to the Dan Levitard Show? Because when I look at this story and, like, why is it that Caleb Williams is not doing stuff that many quarterbacks throughout time have done, it all goes back, per The Athletic and various reporting, to his dad, Carl Williams. And Carl Williams' takes on stuff, they are right out of, if you've been listening to any of the three of us talk about sports, it's like, why is there a draft? A draft is unjust. What about the rookie wage scale? The rookie wage scale is unjust. These deadlines, medical testing, all of this stuff. Carl is the guy, seemingly behind the guy. And I guess, Mina, just you were there in Indy. Like, how much of this story feels to you like a revolution or something else? Because it feels big to me.
If there's a revolutionary aspect to it, or if there's any sort of sea change, I would say this, coming from Indy, it's the fact that this has transcended Caleb Williams. None of the top three quarterbacks did much at the combine. Heck, Jaden Daniels wasn't measured, but none of them did the throwing drills. Caleb, I believe, you know, his statement on that, he didn't do medicals for every team because the reasoning was, well, not every team's going to have a shot at me. Like, when I visit with teams, I'll do the medicals. But it went beyond Caleb. You know, you really felt like a sea change with all these top quarterbacks. And that, to me, feels a little bit different. Now, that's certainly not grabbing your power on the scale of, you know, demanding a trade or asking for equity, which is a huge facet of the story, or, you know, questioning the rookie wage scale. But it is a small revolution, nonetheless. And one that every single personnel person at the combine, agent who I talked to, didn't really have a case for why they shouldn't do it this way.
Archie Manning a long time ago did this for Eli Manning and wasn't protective father, was quarterback who wasn't protected as a player when he played in New Orleans and was great and understood how much the body would hurt and was trying to protect his son from ending up with a bad team. I enjoyed at the very end, after LeBron James did all the things he did, Tom Brady looking up and saying, wait a minute. I have real power. I don't have to be under the thumb of the Patriot way. It probably took him about 15 to 16 years before he realized it. So, of course, all of this would trickle down in sports to Aaron Rodgers realizing at about 38 or 39, if I go to the Jets, I'm my own economy. I'm my own value system. I should ask for ownership. Of course, it's rejected. I think most sports fans don't think of the draft as un-American, the rookie wage scale as un-American, as freedom inhibiting. I think they're so normalized that what will happen is that Caleb Williams and his father will be demonized for trying to shake the system up. They will be like Uncle Dennis was for Kawhi Leonard in asking for the world when he went to the Clippers.
So the Uncle Dennis part is a fun, I didn't make that connection before, but yes, there is something to the idea of essentially a guardian being the bad guy here. And it, the Uncle Dennis story, Mita, it also in the doing of that saga, it kind of took agency away from Kawhi Leonard. Like that was the story. Yeah. It's like Uncle Dennis is doing all, he's this like wizard behind the scenes. He's like making all these demands. Can I get courtside seats? Can I get equity? And part of what this reporting Athletic is suggesting is that actually like maybe a story inside of the story is how much Caleb Williams does or doesn't want any of this. And so the question about equity, which you'd referenced about like, look, in July, right, there was this story in Sports Business Journal that reported that NFL owners had just voted to prohibit, quote, non-family employees from taking equity in teams, end quote. And the reason why is because, per the Athletic's reporting, Carl Williams, Caleb's dad, was broaching the topic with agents, really like trying to get the reason, in fact, Caleb, it seems, didn't hire an agent is because the family, the camp, it's hard to disentangle them for now. They were saying, hey, could you find a way to get us out of the rookie wage scale? Like, yeah. Can you actually find loopholes? And no, so they didn't hire an agent, which is, you know, again, savvy, if nothing else.
Does he need to pay someone, whatever, it's 2 to 5%, I can't remember, for the players now, to negotiate a deal that's already set in stone? That to me makes the most sense out of any of this. Although, when you go against the agents, and we saw this with Lamar Jackson, we've seen this with other players who have chosen to represent themselves, because the agents talk to reporters, that means that yes, your way of doing things will be questioned. So as far as the demonization, which Dan talked about, I think it's worth separating two things here. One is the idea of Caleb Williams or any other player rejecting the draft. And it's very easy to see why fans would not like that. Because fans, your reward for your team sucking is that you get Caleb Williams or whatever, right? So any player who questions that sort of order of things, there's a logic to it that I understand. You can say there's other it's pocket watching, it's disempowering, you're siding with owners, whatever. But I think from a pure football perspective, I can understand why there's some tension there between NFL fans and players, rookies, families.
Sure.
The equity thing is different, though. So the equity story, and I believe Kalen reported that Aaron Rodgers' camp also, maybe it was rumored to ask about this, that resurfaced during the season, even though the story came out last July. During the season, at some point, the aggregators, one of the terrible aggregator accounts, resurfaced it and it went viral and people got really mad at Caleb Williams all over again, even though it's unclear what he actually asked for, what his family asked for, whether it was just asking questions or how serious the inquiry was. That, to me, is something that fans should not be upset about. That is siding with billionaires over millionaires, and it has nothing to do with your football team. And it's also something that players should, quarterbacks in particular, should ask for. I mean, we this morning, Dan and I were talking about a team, the Denver Broncos, who traded away the farm and paid $245 million because they were so desperate for a quarterback. And then now, so desperate to move on from that quarterback, they're absorbing $85 million in dead money. That is how important this position is to your franchise, to the team, to the business of it. Why should that position in particular not partake in the long-term success of the franchise? No good explanations to me.
I got to think that the grand majority of people listening to this, if I told them, here's the deal, you're coming out of college and you're the most valuable person in the universe at this occupation. Do you think you should go to the city of someone else's choosing and your leverage means nothing because your salary is slotted? Nobody listening to this would want that situation for themselves. The only time right now that Caleb Williams could shake up the system is by him and his father asking all the questions right now about why do we have to do it this way when if my son simply went to a sport that didn't have a salary cap. People like Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder fighting over needing a quarterback would go through the roof to pay that person a value that they would assign, and then rich people would fight with each other over seeing who could get that quarterback. The salary cap, to me, is simply theirs because owners know they can't control themselves. And Caleb Williams and his dad should try to get anything and everything they want, but they're not going to get any of what they want. What's going to happen is they're going to get frustrated by this system because I'm not sure that they come from where it is that Archie Manning would come from, which is a lifetime of being able to protect his child's money with his own wealth.
I do think the moment at which you sign the paperwork is the moment at which you lose power, right? That's kind of the recognition here. Like, why is the combine this pivotal moment, Mina? It's because as soon as they sign that rookie deal, you have literally, legally relinquished your right to negotiate in the ways that any sort of person would want to use the power of competition to pit various employers against each other, to try and get the best deal for yourself. All of the stuff that so basically, Carr Williams has been framed as largely a quack in ways that, of course, anonymous people who leak to agents would like to make him out to be, because he's not hiring an agent and he's coming for the very status quo that they profit off of. So that to me is not in much dispute. Like, what is the incentive here? What's so interesting, though, what's really interesting to me, though, is that you now have this generation of guys, because it's beyond Caleb Williams, as Mina said, this generation of guys who are seeing the audition as not their audition, but teams auditioning for them. Like, prove to me that you're the place that I should go, as opposed to, again, I'm nervously cramming for this test because I got to figure out what my IQ is going to be on record here and my bench and my 40 time. That just seems to be this change that seems like it won't stop changing unless you saw what why are you shaking your head there?
I think it's less about, because none of these guys are going to try to control where they end up. Oh, let's be real. I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? Like, this is not going to happen. I would be shocked. But what they are doing is trying to control the process to maximize their earnings where they do end up to get drafted higher, right? You know, like, for example, a player like Jayden Daniels, who's excellent quarterback prospect, rising up, now pushing for number two in the draft. Number two makes more than number three. It's a big deal. He's really thin. And that's a big question mark around him, is his build. And so him saying, yeah, I'm not going to weigh in at the combine, I'm going to weigh in at the pro day, is him saying, I am going to control when you see how heavy I am. For example, I'm just using that as an example. Basically, it's less them saying, hey, all of you teams have to, you know, I'm the employer here, I'm the hirer, and all you teams have to come to me. It's more saying, okay, you're the hirers, you're all my potential hirers, but you're only going to see, I'm only going to take the ACT instead of the SAT to use.
The nerdiest possible example that resonates fully with me personally.
But it's saying, like, you're not going to get all the information you want. I'm going to control because I want to put forward the best possible case for myself. But even that little act of saying you only will get to see X, Y, and Z, that is different from previous years when there was more desperation or at least it felt like more control on the part of the employers.
It's such an interesting tension, though, because you know, Mina, and you know this too, Pablo, the entire football establishment has, maybe it's changed some in recent generations, but my entire lifetime, it's about we control you. We control every aspect of your contract, of your freedom, of your structure. You can do some things when you go home on your own, but we've got control over you. And what it feels like now, a different generation of players who have seen athletes buck on that system, is they want some of that control back. But none of this is going to change, right? Caleb and Carl are, I mean, you called Carl a quack for having perfectly reasonable ideas about freedoms his son should have.
Quoting someone else, calling him a quack, to be clear.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, but I'm saying that Carl is being dismissed. They are being dismissed because everyone's used to, of course, the football team gets control. And I'm asking, how much more control would you like football teams to have? They already have plenty.
Dan, that's what I love about this story, because he has been portrayed to me in the press, the combine, as, you know, stage dad, over-involved, how crazy it is that he's demanding this. But if you took this Athletic article, which kind of outlines the actual things that his Caleb Williams' dad has asked about, not even like demanded, but just kind of inquired about, and you presented all of those things to anyone outside of our sport, I think to a man, they would all agree this is eminently reasonable. Oh, you have... Imagine this was like the tech industry and your son was like, you know, the had, I don't know, invented some sort of product that every company wanted. And if you were going to all these companies, your Facebooks, your Twitters, and you said, yeah, he would like equity. He would like some control over his contract. He doesn't want to go through your song and dance. Nobody would question any of that. And it's one of those things where, like, when you step outside of football, you see how wild it is, the process.
Yes.
But, you know, it is presented as being anything but.
Well, it is funny, right? Like, the idea that in scouting, you're trying to basically psychoanalyze all of these prospects you might pay nine figures to. And the trait that Caleb Williams and his family are exhibiting is an extraordinarily... detailed and sophisticated understanding of how they're trying to attack a defense right now. The defense just happens to be the institutional status quo of the sport itself, as opposed to, you know, the linebacker lining up across from him.
How about like the institution of fatherhood? Because when she says to a man, any father with that child would want these freedoms we're talking about. Like, there's, you will get no disagreement from a single father that loves his child.
Oh, wait, this was a similar discussion around Lamar Jackson and his mom, right? Momager, right?
You know, can you imagine? Let's say Mina's kid is an NFL prospect. What Mina is like at these, like, what kind of stage mom are you going to be for your offensive tackle? Offensive lineman.
I mean, you know. I'm such a rules follower. You know that.
And she loves the NFL. And she loves the NFL about as much as she loves Nino. So she might side with the NFL. Come on, Nino. We're going to comply, right? We can get along. We can
just run the 40. Run the 40. Come on. You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Dan Le Batard.
All of us who were watching college football elevated everything the weekend was because we missed football in general so very much.
You didn't watch the ending of UTEP Jacksonville State. It was awesome.
A dizzy.
Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Stugatz.
such a lane for you. Just everything in college football is awesome. Any single thing that happens, she gets deliriously happy about.
Don't you miss viewing sports through that prism, though? Like, I'm envious of Lucy. Like, I wish that I could still be happy.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
What's up, Fight Fans? We are back with another edition of the MMA Hangout, and UFC 299 is mere hours away. We are very excited. Not only is it our home city, but I had to bring in the big guns. I had to bring in Connor Burks. You know the man, the most electric man on MMA Twitter, producer of the MMA Hour, co-host of No Bets Barred. My boy is out here doing everything. Connor, there's no time for pleasantries. Me and you are friends. Me and you go out and break bread together when I'm in New York. When you come down to Miami, you got sick, so we couldn't hang out. But there's no time for pleasantries. We're getting straight to the main event. Do you have anything to say about this card?
Do I have anything to say about this card, bro? I have too much to say about this card. I could talk about this card for hours. This is one of the best cards I've seen on paper in recent memory. I mean, maybe in like the last like 3 or 4 years. I mean, it's just from top to bottom. I mean, you're talking about this main card. All five fights are just unbelievable. And the main event, as high stakes as you can get, a rematch. You know, the Sugar State Commission said that last time it was a fluke. Cheeto, he can become a champion. I mean, I could go on forever about this.
Let's start right there. We have the main event for the Bantamweight Championship of the World. Sugar Sean O'Malley, who's been on this very show multiple times, friend of the show, and Cheeto Vera, who is a dog. So we'll start off right there. DraftKings has the odds right now at O'Malley minus 270 and Cheeto Vera plus 220. We did No Bets Barred earlier this week, you and I, with Jed, your co-host, and we were talking about how the lines seem a little weird for this fight. Can you give people the historical breakdown that are maybe just getting into the sport for the first time? A very good time to be getting into the sport, by the way, because the last 2 years have been on fire in the UFC. If this is the first card that you're going to watch, you say, oh, you know what? I've seen Shogun on social medias. He's a cool-looking guy. Like, I like his story. Let me go find out more about him. Let me go watch this fight. Can you give people the historical context of Sean O'Malley and why this fight with Cheeto Vera is so important?
Yeah, so I mean, Sean O'Malley is obviously the bantamweight champion of the world now. He had a rise to stardom from the Contender Series on, and people are just drawn to him, man. He's got personality. He's got style. He's got that sort of it factor that you need to become a UFC champion. But if you look at his record, he's got the one blemish on it. You know, he will claim that he's undefeated, but when he fought Marlon Cheeto Vera last time, whether it was from Marlon Cheeto Vera landing the leg kicks, whether it was from an injury that Sean O'Malley sustained during the fight, his leg gave and he wasn't really able to stand on it anymore. He dropped to the ground. Cheeto Vera finishes him with some nasty, nasty ground and pound. And that's a win for Cheeto Vera. And that's essentially why Cheeto Vera is getting this title shot. He's an incredibly talented fighter, incredibly skilled, has had some massive wins and some famous moments. Like, go back and watch the Dominic Cruz head kick knockout. I mean, he has a highlight reel behind him, but he has faced losses to guys in the top tier of the bantamweight division. Corey Sandhagen, for example, just last year, that if he hadn't had this win over Sugar Sean O'Malley, then he wouldn't be getting this title shot. Now, that's not to say that he's not in this fight, because like we said, I think these odds are a little bit off in this one. I mean, you said he is a dog. You cannot knock this guy out. He has got a chin ironclad. Like, he just does not get knocked out. He does not get knocked down. He wears punches beautifully. Like, he looks like he's ready to go on a 5 mile jog after getting into a 5 round war. It really is crazy. So Sean O'Malley's gonna have to work through that. I know he's got the KO power. I know he's calling for a knockout, but that's a lot to ask. So I think the way Sean O'Malley gets this done is likely by taking it 25 minutes, using that volume, landing more punches, outpointing him, and winning a 5 round decision.
And we know with Cheeto, like, he's a slow starter. He's a guy that likes to feel out the fight. He sees it more as a chess game of like, all right, you're going to throw those punches. Let me set stuff up later in the third, fourth, fifth round if it's a 5 round fight. But are you concerned at all that Sean is just going to kind of overpower him in those first couple of rounds and kind of throw a barrage of punches that will make it look to the judges and to the crowd that, oh, wow, O'Malley's in charge of this fight no matter what?
Yeah, see, it's kind of like what you just said. Cheeto Vera is known to be a slow starter. He's sort of just kind of a low volume guy throughout the course of all of his fights. I mean, he has a negative striking differential over the course of his UFC career, whereas Sean O'Malley's putting up like 7 significant strikes a minute to like the 3.5 that are landed. So I think no matter what happens, if this goes to a decision, Sean O'Malley is likely going to be getting his hand raised just based off of the sheer volume. I mean, we've seen Marlon Chito Vera get doubled up on strikes, but he dropped Rob Font at the end of like 3 different rounds, so he was able to get it on the judges' scorecards. I'm not sure I see that happening. I believe in the toughness of Sean O'Malley as well. Go back and watch the Piotr Jan fight. Epic picture of him just covered in blood. I mean, gritty, gritty performance to beat one of the best bantamweights in the world. So I think the longer this fight goes, if Sean O'Malley continues to stay away from the shots that are being set up by Chito Vera, the kicks, you know, the power punches that put him on his ass or anything like that, I think it's just going to continue to favor Sean O'Malley. I could see him banking rounds early on. And then, you know, you get into round 4 and it's like, oh, Sean's up 2-1. He wins round 4. You're going into round 5. And it's like Chito Vera needs a finish here.
Yeah.
-150. Yeah. Right. Now you're getting a real differential. But
yeah,
I feel more confident in just taking that fight goes to a decision rather than Sean O'Malley gets it done.
I mean, if he knocks him out, if he knocks him out, that is undoubtedly, I see you smiling. It's undoubtedly one of the greatest feats in this division, because you said it. He hasn't been knocked out. Not only has he not been knocked out, he's never been knocked down. That's insane.
There are these fighters that have this just like mind-boggling chin. Like, you see it with like a Max Holloway. Mm-hmm. Like, go back and watch Max Holloway, the damage this dude has taken and just never been knocked out, never been dropped, never, like, you've never seen them put in like that insane position where like they're scrambling, they're trying to recover, they're like completely
little wobbly
phased.
Legs
Yeah, they got the wobbly legs. There's just guys like, I mean, like Paulo Costa, I know we've seen him get finished by Izzy before, but like, go back and watch that Whitaker fight, go back and watch
he was eating shots.
It's crazy, man. And then there's the guys that like, they have these chins, they don't get knocked out, and then they wear them. Like, it's just like, it's just crazy. And Chito Vera is at that point in his career. There's a couple guys on this card. Like, Piotr Jan doesn't get finished. Mm-hmm. Pedro Munhoz doesn't get finished. Like, there are several dudes on this card that have just insane levels of durability.
Let's move on to the co-main event, a 5-rounder in the lightweight division for the Diamond. Dustin Poirier, who's taking on Benoit Saint-Denis, who I saw at MSG kick Matt Frivola's head 14 rows up into the garden, and it was like, oh, wow, okay, Saint-Denis really, really good. For those of you who don't know who he is, Connor's going to give you a little bit of historical context on that, but obviously he's fighting a legend, Dustin Poirier, 30 fights in the UFC, like interim champ, legend of the game, dog, like all the accolades you want to heap on Dustin Poirier, and he's fighting, just to give him more accolades, he's fighting a guy that it feels like nobody wants to fight in that division.
Yeah, I mean, Dustin Poirier is a legend of the game. He puts on unbelievable performances, just nights that you'll never forget watching this guy's fights. Like, it's something like 30-something percent of his fights are fight of the nights.
Crazy.
And that's across a 30-fight career. Like, you just know you're getting action when he comes into the octagon. He admitted in an interview this week with Brett Okamoto, and he said it before, that he's just like, I plan on leaving a piece of me in that octagon. I really have no fear of what's going to happen in there. And like, he's coming to war. And on the flip side of this, the guy he's fighting with, the god of war, Benoit Saint-Denis, is the exact same thing. It's almost like he's a younger Dustin Poirier, a younger Justin Gaethje, 13 wins, all 13 by finish. Just go back and like, this is I'm not really into UFC, but I watch like the big fights, like dream fight. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is going to be all action.
It's a banger.
There might be grappling, but like it's going to still be exciting if it hits the mat. The finishing capabilities, Benoit Saint-Denis, he can knock you out. He can submit you. All of his wins come that way. The toughness of both of these dudes, like, you know, it's just going to be a just drag out bloody war. It's going to be unbelievable. And the fact that Dustin Poirier took this fight, I mean, I know there was a lot of money involved. I mean, you can kind of trace the path of how this fight was made. At one point, Dustin Poirier tweeted like, fight's off, guys. And then 7 hours later, he's like, oh, couldn't get in touch with my agent.
JK, we're back.
kind of feels like they were like, all right, wait, here's the amount of money that you actually wanted. We will happily give that to you. And Benoit Saint-Denis, last 5 fights, I believe it is, last 4 or 5 fights, he's looked unstoppable. He's quickly rising. He's very young in this division. So for Dustin Poirier to take this fight, it's not a ton to gain from it. He would beat like the number 11 ranked lightweight right now, and he's number 3. And a guy that among the more casual fans isn't going to be a huge name, whereas Benoit Saint-Denis, he gets a win, he's looking at a title shot, maybe one away, top five in the lightweight division. You're strapping a rocket ship to the dude's back in terms of potential.
It's these two fights, main and co-main, are some of the most exciting fights we've seen, not only this young year, but that we may see all year, because it's just so perfectly match made between these four guys.
100%, man. And this co-main event especially, it's just like, this is the fight that you invite your friend over that doesn't really watch the sport, and you're just like,
get him hooked.
All right, you got to watch this one, man. You got to watch this one.
All right, we have so many more things to go. We're going to, you know, we're going to try to keep it tight here. Between, we've got a minute 30 left. Between,
I was going to say, I see the clock. I got a minute 30.
We're
here.
Tight. So between Kevin Holland MVP, Gilbert Durinho Burns versus JDM, and Piotr Jan versus Song Yadan, give me a quick one sentence about each one. We'll start with MVP and Kevin Holland.
MVP, debuting from Bellator, 21-2, highlight real package, hasn't fought the toughest competition, going up against the gamest, toughest dude ever. I mean, he's got like 21 fights in like 6 years in the UFC, and Kevin Holland, banger written all over it. Mm-hmm. JDM, Gilbert Durinho Burns, similar to the BSD, Dustin Poirier fight, sort of the new guard versus the old guard, Gilbert Durinho Burns being the old guard. Decorated, just legendary BJJ dog status on this mm-hmm. guy. And then JDM, boxing acumen like no other. It's a beautiful thing to watch JDM get into a boxing flow. A very stylistic matchup. If it stays on the feet, I favor JDM. If it goes to the ground, I worry. Gilbert Durinho Burns is nasty down there. Song Yadong, Piotr Jan, my word. This is my second most anticipated fight on this
really?
Card. It's going to be unbelievable.
And it's kicking off too.
Oh my God, it's a scrap, dude. It's a scrap. I wish they would sign a gentleman's agreement beforehand to not go
keep
to the ground, but I doubt they're even going to go to the ground. I mean, you're talking about two of the best boxers, not only in the bantamweight division, but in the entire UFC, super durable, a lot of power, all action. It's going to be a banger. I can guarantee it.
Super cool. We have a ton. I wish we could have done another like 45 minutes. If you want to check out a full breakdown of the entire card, I'll tell you to go check out No Bets Barred, where I did. Obviously, anytime you come to Miami, obviously you call me up, and the boys did. Jed,
gotta call the king of Miami.
Exactly. Called Jed and CB, and they hit me up, and they're like, hey, let's link on No Bets Barred. So if you want to hear the entire breakdown of the entire card from the prelims all the way to the main event, we take care of you. Plus, we sprinkle a little Anthony Joshua and Francis Ngannou, which might be happening right now as we speak. I don't know when this is coming out, but we might have taken Anthony Joshua by decision plus 225. We'll see what that happens. Oh, I don't know. But CB, let them know all the stuff you're doing. We are not having an MMA hangout this time around. Obviously, we're going to be at the fights. We're actually going to be doing a pre-show 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Saturday night from Grails in Wynwood at the Jose Cuervo party. Obviously, you see down low, we're sponsored by Cuervo now. It's big time stuff. That's what we do around here, CB. So I'm going to push people. If you want to check out a live stream during the actual fights, please head over to where he's about to tell you.
Yeah, watch party on Saturday night, MMA Fighting YouTube channel. Watch party on Friday for Ngannou Joshua. That might be going on right now. MMA Hour twice a week, Mondays and Wednesdays. Cuervo, shout out, man.
Come on.
Big sponsorship for you guys.
Come on. DraftKings partners, Cuervo, we love you guys. We appreciate you guys.
We're up.
MMA Hangout, we'll be back maybe next week to recap what happened 299. Until all that, go check out MMA Hour. Go check out the MMA Hangout, 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Saturday. We love you guys.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices?
And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text Thin to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text Thin to 200-300. That's Thin to 200-300. Thin to 200-300.